Hey, this is Daniel, and you're listening to Rushing Forward.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Rushing Forward podcast. Today I have with me Arco. He does developer relations at Microsoft. Arco, how are you doing?
Hello, Daniel. Nice to meet you. And I really look forward to, you know, being on this podcast. I've been seeing all of this good work that you have been doing in the community. Really appreciate all of this good work from people like you.
Ah, thanks. I mean, I've been looking at everything you're doing also. And I mean, that's probably why you're on. So it's great to have you.
Thank you.
So you do developer relations. Many would describe that as the dream job. Would you agree?
I'm sure they do. In short, I will probably just tell you one simple thing. Remember while learning something, being that smart kid in the classroom where you actually get to learn making that code work or playing that good game in the best way, anything such, you get to also teach your friends how to do that in the same way, right? That was something we used to do back in old school, right? But same thing is here as well. As developers, we all want to make sure that no matter what cool projects we work on, no matter what cool products we build, we want to make sure developers are using them. And in simple words, we want to help developers. And that's developer relations, what I do being in Microsoft in general.
Yeah, and I think for you, that's with a specific focus on student developers, right?
Yes. Ideally, if you see, we have students is one of our major audiences, and it goes by our mission statement in Microsoft that we want to empower every person and every organization on planet Earth. And when I mean person, it could be a developer. And when it's a developer, it could be a student, it could be someone, a professional, it could be a startup, some person from startup, anything. So I majorly focus in professional developers and students both. So yes, students is a part of my focus area, and I try to help student developers in my best possible way.
Yeah, that's a very interesting mission. And I definitely agree. I mean, I love to see student developers as like these budding developers who one day, you know, will become the professional developers of the world. But hey, there's no tag. A developer is a developer, right?
Yeah, things have changed. It's no more, the old psychology that, hey, it's just about writing lines and lines of code and just being behind the screen. Things have changed today. Roles have come up more, like it's more oriented in real case scenarios where we want to encourage developers to not just write code, but also write technical content, build technical content, encourage more developers to get on the stage, talk about it, talk about their projects. So all of this sums up, right? I mean, if you have good projects or good products, that's great. You need to know how to write good technical content as well. You need to know how to write that good documentation as well. All of this, you know, streamline in the modern developer psychology, if you say, where we expect every developer to not just write that line of code, but also build amazing products, but also engage mostly in, you know, writing, speaking, coding, all of that together. That's modern developer relations today.
I can't agree more. We both do developer relations, and I really like to ask people about their journeys. What was your journey into developer relations? How did you get this dream job per se?
I'm sure it was my dream job, honestly, and it's still something which I love working on, and I'm continuing to do that. So in general, I would say like there are multiple genres to developer relations. A few of them I'll list out. So there are multiple things. One is content is a big thing in developer relations. If you see all big companies, those who are building products, APIs, anything, any pick any good company, your favorite language, anyone, they do developer relations by writing that good technical documentation. So content is a big thing. So content is something that a lot of people focus on. There is something called as growth. That is also something that all companies almost focus on. They want to make sure that the products are being, you know, relevant towards the market audiences. There are marketers in the developer relations. There is community managers in the developer relations team. There are people, those who run multiple events within developer relations team. So there are PMs who are work mostly on the product side. There are multiple assets to developer relations. And for me, it was definitely like moving from a moving my path from an engineering role and going in depth in exploring advocacy, which I really love doing, probably around open source. And because my engineering career was like, say, that was when I started off as an AI engineer. And back in Sapien AI, when I used to like, when bot framework was like new and we were like exploring multiple set of stuff. So it was back then, it was something we all explored. And that's how I started off my career.
And did you see yourself getting into developer relations, being an engineer? Is that something that you were aiming for?
Yes. So, I mean, having an engineering background is definitely a plus point. I'm not saying there are a lot of people who are completely out of, you know, there are people those who break the stereotypes. There are people. And there are a lot of people who do that. So you can't really say that you need to be, you know, having an engineering background is mandatory today. No, there are a lot of people, they have probably graduated in arts or anything, but still ending up being a good developer. So that's totally fine. But yeah, it's always a plus point, right? I mean, if you are trying to go to a hackathon or go to a conference, talk about your products, you talk about your set of languages or your frameworks, whatever it is, you want people to use your products and give you back those feedbacks. You should be able to understand those feedback, right? If I am, you know, going in front of an audience and talking about something of Microsoft, I should be able to know that product well when I'm, you know, advocating for it. So that's like a typical understanding that, hey, what is an advocate? So in general, again, so an advocate is someone who is like, you know, talking about something or favoring something. I mean, it could be a simple thing. Like I could be an advocate of, say, Windows laptops, like anything. I could be an advocate for open source, anything as such. So typically these things really matter a lot whenever you want to get into developer relations. So pick your genre, pick anything. I did that and wanted to make sure that I streamline my career also around this. Having you know, product sense is definitely important, helps you, you know, drive quality developer relations, because it's ultimately about working with developers and the product that you work for or cater for from the company standpoint. So there are a lot of things which come into picture. And I am a newbie into developer relations, to be very honest. And it's just a year that I'm in Microsoft. But there's a lot to learn, honestly. There's a lot to learn from a lot of the broader community. Every day you meet a new developer, try to understand from him, the perspective is different. The way they probably, you know, try to learn from multiple your product could be different. Someone could be, you know, someone might think that, hey, video content of video technical content is like the best thing. But some might believe that, hey, those docs are gem. So I would rather keep it on docs and have entirely on docs. So there are multiple assets, multiple strategies, tactics to it. But it's a never, you know, ending journey. You can't really predict how and what is going to happen in developer relations.
Yeah, I agree.
Typically, if you see the market, right? I mean, there are a lot of, you know, misleading thoughts, misleading blogs, multiple things. It's not always like a lot of
like what? What do you feel has misled a few people?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of these discussions that, hey, if I'm doing developer relations, do I have to drive sales for my organization? Yes, a lot of people do in a lot of organization. And I don't mean to, you know, offend any one of them. A lot of people have those as their KPIs, making sure they drive sales. But again, that's totally something which depends on the product that you're working on. That totally depends on the project that you're involved in and the team you are involved in within developer relations. So it's a very broad term, right? If you say, I mean, like it's as big as an organization, honestly.
Definitely. I mean, from my experience talking to a bunch of companies doing developer relations, and even just from working in certain companies, I think it's very dependent on what the company needs. I like to see like developer relations really attached to some of the metrics or some of the KPIs that the company actually has to achieve. So if certain things like driving sales is important for the company, in a way, developer relations might be connected to that. Not necessarily that their whole focus is on doing that, but the activities, advocating and engaging with developers might help that out. I mean, that's the way I like to see it. Like, if adoption is important, then developer relations will do a lot of things that help achieve that.
That's totally true. And that's how, I mean, it completely depends on the product that you're working on or you're advocating for. That's how you streamline who's your audience, how do you drive those KPIs and all of that. So yeah, it's very much flexible around this. So it's totally about how much your product is or what your product is. It aligns to that mostly. And then those things come into consideration that what am I going to do being in developer relations for X organization?
True. So you mentioned you've been at Microsoft for about a year, right?
Yes, it's more than a year now.
Yeah, just over a year. How has that been? How's that experience been? What have been like a lot of your takeaways? What have you learned? How do you think you've grown as a person in that year?
Honestly, I mean, one thing which I really was considering before joining Microsoft, and then now that I am in Microsoft, I was excited and I was thrilled that, hey, I'm going to join DevRel for Microsoft, all of that. But in between, I was also scared that, hey, I'm young and, there's a lot of people who are experienced in all of that in probably in Microsoft, because it's an old company, you all know, right? And we all know, like, how much value they have given to the entire generation of engineers and software developers and the entire society in general as well, right, from the products they have built. So I was also nervous initially, like, hey, how will I manage, being in this kind of a genre, all of this with very less experience and all of that. But as I really got into the role, meeting the team and all of that, I was really fluent enough in picking things up, and which I enjoyed doing. And I saw the best part was people being supportive in an organization. Like, yes, when people say they are a call away, they mean to do that. They are a call away, and I'm not kidding about it. So I work in a remote team. It's a global remote team that I work for, and it's completely like scattered. And my manager sits out of in Australia and my boss is probably in US, all of that. But it's totally fine. You see, people aren't that what it used to be like. People say that now, I'm sure it's challenging. I know a lot of people say that working from home is challenging and working remotely is challenging. There are pros and there are cons as well. I've learned a lot of like adapting how a developer would react to the same set of tactic. Maybe in India it's different, but maybe in Japan it might be different, but maybe in somewhere in Southeast Asia it might be different, or maybe in the Western countries might be different. So like there are tactics to developer relations when you are engaging with developers, right? For example, say,
I like that point you brought up. It's something I've been really thinking about deeply, how things are different in different regions, you know. The way I put it is sort of trying to scale the culture of your organization or the way you put out things as a developer relations team, you know. Something that might work in one region of the world won't necessarily work in another, but there are certain abstractions you can create around your strategy where you can say, this is the core of what we are trying to achieve. And there's probably a very specific way that it's done in, let's say, India, and there's a very specific way that it can be done in Zambia. But at the core of that, there's something we're trying to achieve. But I mean, it's a very interesting topic. Sorry to put you away from that. How are you approaching that, being in a global team?
Yeah. So honestly, I mean, one thing which we try to be mindful of is it's a multiple cultures you need to be mindful of when you're doing developer relations at scale. So that's something, it belongs to your you know, audience that you're trying to reach. It belongs to your interest. It belongs to your organic reach that you already have in that particular place, and a lot more things factor in. So the strategy is having no fixed strategy when you're doing developer relations, honestly, especially when you're doing it at scale of something which has multiple audiences to hit at the same point of time. Because you might, but yes, it's really important to also have a lot of things in mind, that is like knowing the culture. So what we believe in Microsoft, if you see in general, is we want to help developers. And how do we help developers? It's like we go where developers are. I mean, if you see, in India, there's a huge interest in, say, JavaScript. There's a huge interest in Python community. There's a huge interest picking up in the Go community. All of this is picking up. I mean, Go is picking up. So probably Go might not be a major, you know, stack in Microsoft. But yes, we want to go to the Go community as well, nurture them or work with them, know from their interest, and then probably work back on our products to make them enabled for our, you know, set of products that we are shipping to developers. So the originally, if I have to say, we intend to always go where developers are. And now that we are, you know, remotely and we are doing all the stuff virtually, I mean, we'll come to you. Yes, we'll still come to you, maybe virtually. So things are picking up, and things will pick up well, I think, even across this pandemic as well, because nothing stops and developer relations won't stop as long as we have, you know, products being shipped to users and developers and customers, all of that happening. We want to know that what is happening and what is not happening. We want to fix those errors and we want to make sure that our developers are happy. So this will continue and this shall continue throughout.
Definitely. I mean, from the conversation we're having yesterday, you mentioned you are working around with like live streaming, and like it's something you did not know completely before, I think like a week ago. Is that something that happens a lot on your job? Like you just have to come up and learn a new skill, learn a new technology and perform.
Honestly, learning is important. I mean, you have to learn as you know, do developer relations, because you can't have one set of fixed set of things that you want to always talk about. That's not happening. I mean, say it like moving your entire strategy of offline to gaining interest online, you have to learn how to do that, or you have to get better at it. Because my first podcast video is gonna be something which I like it, but yes, I should improve from it as well. So it's a basic learning curve that we all have, right? And there are skills and all of that. So yeah, it's some of them is like more from a, you know, getting better at multiple things. So a lot of people might not be, you know, always familiar. Just because of the reason they are, you know, developer relations doesn't mean that they have to be that rock star on stage. There is nothing as such. So, but a lot of people are actually doing that, but that's okay. So things, you need to pick up skills as per the scenario is, as per the market interest is, and accordingly you have to work towards it. A lot of regions, if you see, like you mentioned, right, things which might work in India might not work in Zambia. So a lot of places really pick up well with video content, but a lot of places rather doesn't need video content, much video content. A lot of places might need localization of video content. A lot of places, English is like the primary language, right? So those things factor in. So when you're doing developer relations, these are like add-ons which you have to be always equipped with or be ready to learn, which will help you in, you know, shaping up the developer relations and shaping up your interaction with developers well. So if I'm comfortable, say, for example, doing workshops at hackathons, I should also be, comfortable in doing the same version of it online as well. So that when the audience changes, when the market scenario changes, I should be able to pick it up.
True, very true. I mean, there's definitely always learning, but then it's a lot of people have accused developer relations professionals of being like generalists. Like there's always so many things that they touch, but never really go in depth into anything specifically. So I have two questions for you here. Do you think that's true? And if yes, how do you think that might affect your career growth going forward?
Okay, honestly, generalization is something, okay, like there are two ways to understand this. So if I really have to speak to someone about our technology or a product or anything, I would really fit up any technology explanation in the form of a content in multiple levels. Like I could have a level 100 level content, I could have a level 200 level content, or 300 or 400. And it really depends on the timeline that I am fitting up to. So, for example, if you want me to drive a level 400 level content in front of an audience in 10 minutes, that something is difficult to do. We want to make sure that when we work with communities, when we work around with multiple, you know, audiences, we drive the right set of audiences with the right set of content. There are a lot of people, I'm sure in multiple brands they do that, but what I have seen, there are people who do good developer relations as well, and they shape up their content in multiple levels and they be very clear about it. I mean, yes, we want to talk the basics. We want to help with you. We help those developers with those basics, which is important as well. But that doesn't really mean that we talk always in general very low level content or anything as such. There are people, they run, you know, end-to-end Twitch streams on multiple tech stack, and they run end-to-end workshops maybe for 3 hours, 4 hours long as well, and they go in depth as well. Really depends. You see a lot of startup advocates also out there, right, in developer relations. They work closely with startups in getting their, you know, from their, you know, minimal viable product level, you know, that phase of discussion to getting them, you know, build ultimate prototype and the product which gets shipped in the market as well. So there are advocates of multiple organizations. They work closely with those startups in getting those products being built. That's there as well. So you can't really generalize. Like saying that, you know, developer relations is someone, folks, those who, you know, just talk about the general set of content. So, yeah, I don't really agree to that, because there are a lot of quality people in the ecosystem doing a great job around this particular thing in making sure people not just scale from 0 to 1, but also scale from 1 to 100.
Yeah, I definitely agree also, but it's something that bothers me, because a lot of people want to put all those labels on different types of professionals. So, I mean, it's interesting to hear your perspective on it. And like, going back to my second question, in terms of like career growth and like where you want to be, how do you see developer relations fitting into that?
I think with time, it's going to add up value to my, you know, my learning curve, add up value to definitely my CV or my portfolio, whatever you say. Just because it adds up a lot of value, honestly, throughout a person's career. I mean, in developer relations or in general as a product guy, whatever it is, helps you in shaping up your engineering career well.
So are you looking to get like deeper into engineering, product, marketing or sales?
My interest,
or maybe working to get like startups.
Yeah, my interest has always been working closely with a product. And let's see how things shape up in future.
Yeah, definitely. I'm very excited to see what you do next. But hey, one step at a time, right?
Of course, totally.
So also people or not necessarily people, but I think developer relations, well, there are different types, and it can be quite draining on your or it can be quite detrimental to your mental health. Like it's known for burning people out really fast. I mean, you've been at Microsoft for a year. How have you avoided that?
Okay, it's a lot of people say that DevRel is exhausting. I've heard people saying that DevRel, like all of that. See, again, it really depends on how a person really balances up a career. And we are a little, I mean, honestly, I'm a little vocal in the community. So say if you are a person who is actually always on the move, it's like, even if you're trying to skip your regular day, still you'll probably get a you know, DM on Twitter or somewhere else, and asking, someone might email you asking that, hey, I'm doing this. Be there in this community. You know, it's a simple, basic dev community. Probably catch up. We want to have you as an AMA or a guest speaker. All of that. You still can't get out of it. That's something which is there while working in these kind of roles. But that's okay. When things shape up, you often take up I mean, I'm new to this, and honestly, I can't give you a futuristic answer saying that, hey, like, I've been balancing my life amazingly. So I'm still 23, and I don't get to say that how I'll probably balance it up when I'm, you know, 32. So I don't have a exact answer, but yes, I've been enjoying the work that I do. And I really look forward to, you know, balance the same way which I'm doing right now, maybe in 32 as well, or maybe later.
So you are balancing it now, right? Like, yeah, it's a good amount of work, but a good amount of like rest or leisure. What do you do in your free time?
In my free time, I love to read a lot, and it could be, you know, tech blogs, or it could be, you know, business blogs, anything. I read a lot about startups, multiple things. So like, I have a, you know, say tab of say Forbes or say Product Hunt always up and running. So I try to read a little bit more about what product is coming up or whatever is new in tech happening around. So love to read a lot. And yes, apart from the basic set of interests that everybody has, yeah, spend a fair amount of time on Spotify, hearing to anything on everything, almost.
Who's your favorite artist? And what's your favorite song at the moment?
Favorite song at the moment? I think by the time you ship this podcast, it would change. So let's not get there. No specifics.
Oh, no, we're shipping today. By the way,
we're shipping today. All right, I'll have to scroll in. Maybe I had some good fine tuned thing, but yeah, never mind. Anyways,
yeah, no worries. We'll probably get it towards the end. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Like, the balance that you have now is probably not the balance that you have in a couple of years. And I think it's just best to enjoy what you have now and then solve that problem when it comes up. So I think from me following you on Twitter, I've noticed you do quite a lot of hackathons. How has your experience with those been?
I mean, hackathons are something any developer would really regard it as, like, you know, every developer loves concert. If you say that, I mean, not every developer loves concert. I mean, if you love concert, like, you as a developer, you should love hackathons as well. Like, that's how I say it. It's like your favorite developer's gig, I would say. I mean, yeah, some people say conferences are boring. There are people, they come do business talks, blah, blah, blah. Okay, meetups are like overrated. But what about hackathons? Nobody really says a no. I mean, if you're a, you know, someone who loves working with technology, loves hacking into multiple problem statement, anything as such, and hackathons have become a culture today. And there is very less that I can speak about it, because a lot of it happens in action. If you see, I have been closely involved almost for 5-6 years now, that with hackathons specifically. And over the time, I've learned so much from hackathons, and that helped me shape up my career as well. And I've met a lot of developers, made friends, worked on projects together, and it's always a better experience. I mean, that you can get from a hackathon than anywhere else, I feel. Even if it's gone online today, but I'm sure there are, you know, the culture still stays the same.
No, definitely. I agree. I have never heard anyone say anything terrible about a hackathon. I mean, free food, hacking, is surrounded by peers. It's the good life.
Totally, buddy.
How many have you been to in like the past year? How many do you think you've been to?
So you want to, last year, I mean, so far, do you want me to give you a, you know, rough number in last 1 year, or do you want me to say overall?
I mean, yeah, a rough number, unless you have the exact number.
I don't have exact either. It's above 50 for sure overall. So far, I've been to 50 plus hackathons. I've attended.
That's one a week.
Yes, I've attended some of them. I've organized some of them. I've mentored some of them, judged some of them, done everything almost, which requires, I mean, from a hackathon. So, yeah.
I mean, wow. I mean, what was your first one like? Not necessarily as an organizer, but like attending.
Yeah, so I remember I was in my university back then, and it was like in my first year of engineering and all of that, and things happen all frequently, and it was a community hackathon happening in a university. I attended that. Then I attended multiple more hackathons. I was there for this In50R hackathon, the NASCOM hackathon, multiple hackathons I've been at initially in my first year of college. And then slowly, steadily, when I started contributing to multiple more communities and all of that, as very, working together with a lot of folks in the Mozilla Foundation, all of that. So it really, you know, picked up my interest in, you know, running some hackathons as well in good scale. And I think we met at Hackference, if you know. I worked with a couple of my, you know, friends, yeah, and they have been doing developer relations as well. And it's a story. I mean, honestly, I mean, if I have to say to people that how things, hackathons changed my career. Yes, if I have to say, did it change my career? Yes, I did. Because there's a lot I've learned from a lot of people from hackathons, say it from every developer I meet, who is an attendee even, like he comes back to me with a doubt or anything, even if I'm able to help, that's great learning from me and great sharing from me. He gets back home happy. Same thing, even if he doesn't get back the answer, but I get back to my folks and I get the answer and I reply back to him, that's a way that makes me happy as well. So it's all about, like, if you want to really work closely and knowing that product feedback, knowing that what works well, yes, go to a hackathon. You'll get to know enough amount of feedback that what works well for your product, what doesn't. Like, okay, like make those, like all companies do that investment if you see, right? And a lot of people really, you know, today, if you say in general, give spend a fair amount of time also in being at hackathons because they feel that it enables their learning curve as a student or as a professional as well, being at hackathons. Because ideally, if you see, if I have to mention about the value is more about two things. One is knowing what you don't know. Number two is knowing the people you don't know. Two things are really key today in this entire ecosystem. You want to know what is something which is picking up, what is trending, what is, okay, what is something which is not trending, but okay, still staying back. What is something that we all want to encourage people to work on? What works well? What doesn't? What, why it doesn't work well? These are questions. It's not just, you know, like putting ahead that same project up on again and again. Because if you see at a hackathon, it's not just a project showcase. You work something at home, come present it. No, you build it out there. Okay, you're working on something. You hear some additional thing from a different team while networking. That's when you get to know the person as well. And you get to know something additional. Probably crunching up that part on your project will help you ship your project better. There are tons and tons of things which you can talk about around hackathons. And I've documented some of them on my blogs as well. And I think that it's a very learning thing. And I encourage every person today, like I meet, especially students who are like, you know, picking up in universities and all of that, to participate more in hackathons because it will help them drive their learning curve more. Because intentionally, I don't say that, hey, go, you know, have a great CV or anything, or a great resume. That doesn't help. Adding up those 10 different skills is probably great. You might be great at it, but we don't get to evaluate. But adding up 5 such good projects which you have been at or worked at 5 hackathons will seriously grab the eyes or attention of that person who is probably looking into your portfolio. That's my simple answer always. Like, that's the major value of hackathon for a, you know, student at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, that is quite the value. There's like the technical aspect, there's the networking effect, and then there's also just having stuff to show that you've built. And you also touched a bit into like the business value of hackathons for companies. Like, why do you want to get into a hackathon? I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on the value hackathons provide to an ecosystem. So like Bangalore, for example, and India in general, I think there's been this eruption of hackathons over the past 5 years where it was like these were really just events. I think In and Out was a really popular one before, and there's like Hack on the Hills, and like there's a lot of really cool hackathons. And coming when with like MLH coming in, what effect do you think all that is having on like the culture of building and improving the quality of engineers in the country?
Yeah. So like, if you have already mentioned, let me start with MLH. MLH was something which has grabbed the eyes of every developer who is into hackathons. All of us know about MLH and all of that. And if you see, when they were moving their set of focus across APAC, and which includes India as well, they had a huge thought behind running it in India. And if you see the investment from a business point of view, Microsoft have been partnering on the entire APAC story, if you see. So all these hackathons, all of that. So from Microsoft, it's Microsoft Azure. If you see, we want to go at those hackathons, making sure we, you know, impact those student developers as well. So it's, these are good quality hackathons, which we want to go at. And there is nevertheless an experience that we want to get from, you know, the student developers building amazing projects on social good, on multiple more aspects, which helps us understand how scalable or how good Microsoft, you know, products are shaping up like in front of the student developers. Getting those student developers to build on Azure is like something that we want to encourage people doing that. It's not about getting our products being consumed always. It's always about, you know, helping people with those resources together at hackathons to enable them in building good products. Because there are technologies, there are ways that we try to support in person, offline, or maybe like virtually, remotely, anything you say. We try to be there at hackathons as much as possible, trying to, you know, support them with resources, support them with mentorship. Mentorship plays a very key role at hackathons, if you see. And, you know, a brand like Microsoft brings up that skills, those resources as in person, trying to support hackers in building up scalable products. And it's been, you know, huge in India. And if you see, India is like probably, I was reading an article in, if I'm not wrong, like it's in Times of India, where they have mentioned this year, I mean, 2019-2020 was when India was the host to the largest amount of hackathons. And which is true. In a city like Bangalore, you have hackathons, a student hackathon or a professional hackathon or something or the other happening almost every weekend. Saturday, Sundays grabs up attention of people. It might be a weekend, might not be the culture the same way in the Western countries, but people are interested in, you know, spending their weekend time in being at a hackathon, learning, networking with people. The culture is really great in India around hackathons. And that's the main reason that brands have been investing, like Microsoft.
Yeah.
And we find
how do you think it got there?
Rome wasn't built in a day, and so isn't the hackathon culture in India. It took a fair amount of time. If you see, like I myself, when I was in my university, I've seen things happening, at least the hackathon culture. Yes, I've witnessed that growing. So it used to be, maybe like 10, 20 a year or 25 a year, good hackathons you could hear. But now it's like blown. It's huge, huge. There are good hackathons happening in multiple places. Universities today, if you see, a lot of companies, MLH, then GitHub, Microsoft, multiple people have, you know, joined in. And it's not just these big brands always. A lot of communities encourage hackathons. There are student volunteers. There are people. They convince their universities to do good hackathons, and which is a good part, I really believe. And I think that's a good learning also for people around, just to make sure that they want to, you know, celebrate it as a culture, because that's really important. I mean, if you keep this thought process in mind that hackathons are just, you know, project showcase, that's not done. You're not doing justice to this entire thing. You should celebrate it as a culture. If you're doing that, that's great.
And if you would describe hackathon culture in one sentence, what would you describe it as?
It's one thing, if I have to say, one sentence, an epic event for developers. It's developers' favorite gig, or rather, the either ways.
That is brilliant. I definitely agree. I mean, like everything we've been talking about sort of has just made this idea pop up in my head. I mean, from you mentioning your journey, going from engineering into everything and getting to developer relations, your work in college with hackathons, and just really working with all these organizations. It leaves me asking, like, what is your drive? Like, why are you doing everything you're doing? So, I mean, it might be a very deep question. I hope you can answer it.
Okay, so one thing which I really, you know, it's a thought process or a thing which I always try to keep up is I'm a little flexible, but doesn't mean that I am flexible completely around things when I do. Yes, I have set up, small, ways or path, I would say. Like for me, it's about making sure that I want to contribute to the community, a broader community. And the number, even if it is like, making sure that, hey, I'm trying to help a developer or a dev community on a larger level, let that increase as with time. And I don't mean to set that time limit or set that number either. So I have just one thought process about the work which I do. Like if I am right now involved in, say, making sure I talk about Microsoft Azure in front of my larger community, I talk about building the community in larger scale. That's great. If I want to write content, I might contribute in writing content. So I'm pretty much flexible on all of these. So I want to make sure that whatever I do, it could be writing, it could be speaking, it could be code, anything. I try to make sure that it ultimately shapes up or helps developers to the work which I do, and definitely helps in shaping up the community in whole.
When did you really start to understand the concept of community?
Okay, community in general, if you see, it's a very broad thing. Like it's
exactly, because I think sometimes it's a word people throw around a lot. Like, I'm doing this for the community, or is it like very context driven? Because in like what you were saying, the community being the overall developer community or the specific developer community that you are. This has been such an amazing chat, and we're running out of time. So I want to end with a question. So Yashovardhan replied to a tweet of yours, and it says, you say Arco Duty, they say single malt. Can you tell me what that's about?
Okay. All right. That's probably, isn't it censored or something like that? So yeah, I love single malt. So whiskey is my favorite drink after chai. Yeah. And no offense. Yeah. I love whiskey and have a pretty good collection of single malts.
It's totally good. Don't worry.
Yeah. I have a pretty good collection of single malts. So yeah. Even if like every time I travel somewhere, I try to, I have a set of, the ones which I love, there's a taste and all of that. It's not about just drinking. I try to study a bit about it as well. I make some good cocktails. So yeah, next time you are in Bangalore yes, let's catch up. And then we'll have another podcast maybe.
probably a much more fluid one. But hey, it's been amazing chatting. I mean, if anyone wants to reach out to you, where can they find you online?
I kind of live on Twitter. Or maybe sometimes on Instagram as well. So yeah, these are the best places apart from email, which is the best way to do. So yeah, I'll drop you. You can always drop in the details to the viewers and all of them. And yes, they can definitely work it out.
All right, sure. I'll mention that in the show notes. But it's been great having you, Arco Duty. Thanks for coming on and sharing all this knowledge.
Thank you so much, Daniel. Really appreciate the good work that you're doing. Keep up this good work and continue the work that you're doing. Amazing. Thank you so much.
No worries. I'm supposed to be saying nice things about you, not the other way around. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to Rushing Forward.
Thank you for listening to Rushing Forward. Send us your comments and suggestions at malgamves, malgamves, or codecastzm.